Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
95.7 The Game, live and local. Now, it's Matt Steinmetz and the Guru.
What's going on, everybody? Matt Steinmetz along with Daryl the Guru Johnson at noon on a Sunday in the Bay. Downtown San Francisco is looking nice out there. The rain's gone away. We got some football games this afternoon. We had some football games yesterday. We got the Golden State Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers tomorrow in a Martin Luther King Day special.
Woo.
We got sports galore, and we're going to be talking about it for the next 4 hours. What's going on, Guru? How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, Matt, but I'm a little irritated.
How come?
You know, it's championship football is upon us.
Yes.
And there was no morning game on a Sunday. I had my Jimmy Dean sausage, don't judge me, my hash browns. I'm talking to my dad, and we're sitting around the table enjoying each other. No 10 o'clock kickoff in Kansas City. I get it. I understand. You explained the black ice and the ice storm to me. I appreciate it. But other than that, Matt, I'm happy and the sun's out in the Bay, and we're about to do work.
Yeah, in case you haven't heard, the Chiefs-Steelers game was supposed to be at 10 o'clock this morning, but they've pushed it back till tonight because of an ice storm in Kansas City. And my California guy, we're heading into the show today, and he says, what's an ice storm? And I'm happy to tell him what an ice storm is as somebody who lived back east for almost half my life. It's very cold. It's when the temperature's between, let's say, 30 and 35, and it comes down, but it's not snow. It's more like rain, but it's a little harder than regular water.
That sounds like rocks.
It can be, or like tough sleet, and then it hits the ground, forms water, and then it freezes. And then it's just everything's ice.
So I can't imagine that
really
field in Kansas City. That's going to be a problem.
It's going to be hard.
Antonio Brown may not be as fast as he normally is. Wow.
Well, they'll probably they've got ways to not make it like an ice skating rink, the field itself, but the field is going to be very hard because of the cold weather.
Oh, man.
And obviously they were worried about some people driving to the game today, and that's why they postponed it. We're going to be jumping around a lot today. We're going to talk Warriors. We're going to be talking football. I watched the Patriots yesterday, and I'm thinking, man, what a dynasty they have. And it just got me thinking to some of the most successful sports franchises that we've seen in our life. And I know there are a lot of 49er fans out there, but I think the Patriots, what they're doing, they may be the new gold standard. So if you want to jump in and talk about anything, 888-957-9570 is the number. The Penske Auto Sales text line 95795. And Guru, let's start with little Warriors. Little Warriors Cavs tomorrow. Big game, rematch of the Christmas game. The Cavaliers won on Christmas, 109-108. They came back from 14 points down and with 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They won the last three games of the finals last year, which makes it four straight games that they've beaten the Golden State Warriors. How big do you think this game is, and do you think the Cavaliers are in the heads a little bit of the Golden State Warriors?
I do, but not to the degree it will be after tomorrow's game is in the books. After that fourth quarter collapse in Cleveland on Christmas Day, the national stage, and the three losses in the finals to go in the history books, Matt, hell yes, that's my answer. There's something going on here, and this game is already, because they lost and they were on the losing end on Christmas, this is already bigger for Golden State than it is for Cleveland. And we know how great, just when this team just shows up and goes out on the court for the jump ball, how great the Warriors are, Matt. And I've bought into the notion, hey, they're so superior to all these other teams. How many real competitive games do they have left on their schedule?
Right.
So to me, this game, guru math, this game is like 8 games. And I want to see the Warriors come out with a new attitude. I want Steph Curry to push somebody down.
Steph Curry push somebody down? Who's he going to push down?
How about Kyrie Irving?
He gets pushed down.
How about Kyrie Irving? Take a hard foul. Send a message. Because, Matt.
Do you think Curry can even give a hard foul?
Yeah, Curry's got some little guns on him.
Come on. Little guns. Little guns, like little derringers.
Matt,
you know what a derringer is?
No, tell me.
It's one of these little small guns. It's like a toy gun. It's real, but it's pretty small.
I went to watch him warm up before the game. He's got knots on his bicep, Steph, from shooting that damn far and shooting them many times. I'm like, see, people think he's a derringer? Yeah, people think, but I'm telling you, he's
not a magnum.
I just want him to send a message. And I think what's happening is, real quick, what Draymond did against Memphis actually worked out, and the message, Steph has took heed to the message, and basically he's being more aggressive. And I feel like now, if the Warriors need a play or a bucket, everybody kind of knows their role, or it's reinforced, and Steph is at a point to where he's not walking on eggshells, and I think he'll be the first option, like I think he should be, Matt.
It does feel like over the last 10 days to 2 weeks, Curry's made a concerted effort to become more offensive. He's taking more shots. He is being more aggressive. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think the best part about that, Guru, is I think his teammates want him to do that. Even Durant. I think what happened was Durant came. Clay's going to be Clay.
Yep.
Durant came. Draymond Green shot less this year. And even Curry's deferred to Durant, let's say, the first 25, 30 games. I think it made Durant a little bit uncomfortable, too, because I don't think Durant was feeling good about coming onto this team and kind of being the number one option right off the bat. And I'm not saying he didn't handle it well. He's handled it great because he's been very efficient. But I think now we're halfway through the season. They're seeing how things are working out, and now it's going back to being Curry's team.
And, no, you're so right. And it's amazing how many facets to a player's game there are.
Mm-hmm.
Because watching Kevin Durant, who I knew was great, Matt, with OKC, getting to watch him like we do because he's in town, you're just sitting there, I am, with my jaw on the floor like, damn, this is almost amazing what this guy can do on a basketball court. But then you remember it's levels to this. And Kevin Durant, notoriously in his career, Matt, in crunch time, the numbers back me up. He's not as crunch as one would like you to believe. So that's why I'm saying maybe he's happy now that Steph may take over, you know, during crunch time to save Kevin from himself,
right,
who may get in a cluster or what have you, you know, in crunch time.
Sure.
And I think
sure.
That's helping the Warriors.
So you were out at, you saw Cleveland play the Kings on Friday?
Yeah,
you went up to Sacramento?
Yeah, my boy Phil Handy hooked me up. I let Phil's house
game?
Down. I got to throw that out there. So if he's telling everybody.
He's fine.
Okay.
He got into
boy.
The building.
Okay.
Feldhaus, if you don't know, is one of the producers here. He's from Cleveland, from Ohio. And so I guess he went up there without a ticket. He still got it.
And I got to see LeBron. The building was beautiful. So props to Kevin Johnson for keeping the Kings in there. And they did a great job. But I'm going to say something that you might not agree. Matt, not only do I watch the game, I watch the guys on the bench when they come out the game.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, as great as LeBron James is and has been an athletic marvel, and I may not shock you with this assertion, athletically, he's on a decline. And when I say decline, it's not drastic and so bad that he can't dunk. But there are things that LeBron used to do and just play above the rim, Matt,
right,
to where now he's yelling for fouls because that elevation and that explosiveness is not really there. So he's arguing and fighting with himself because he's feeling mortal. And there was a couple instances in the game at SAC where he's just arguing with the ref for a foul,
right,
like he did in Utah. But then I said, that's why Kyrie Irving is beautiful. That's why what they have going is perfect, because you noticed this, and it happened last year in the finals. LeBron will get you there, Right. And then when that tank kind of gets on the corner tank E, he gives it to Kyrie, and he's the closer. And I think that's scary for the Golden State Warriors, who I feel are trying to find that identity about themselves.
I do think LeBron isn't finishing around the rim now like he did 3 or 4 years ago, but that's to be expected. I still think he's probably a better athlete than, 9 out of every 10 players?
Yeah, and then ran down and got an alley-oop and almost jumped out the gym. So it's in spurts, but you get what I'm
saying. No doubt. And you know what? He's so smart. He may be pacing himself for the playoffs and the finals. I mean, if anybody knows how to do it now, it's him. What's he been to? 6, 7 straight NBA finals?
How difficult do you think that is, that word pace? Because real quick, Matt, last year I was, LeBron can't jump over a newspaper in the regular season.
Right.
He's fit out. And then he went in the playoffs, and I said, that word you just used, he was pacing himself. Yeah. I mean, how hard is that?
He took time off last
year.
Remember, he basically took a week or two off in the middle of the season, or right around this time of the year.
Is that just a mindset? I'm not going to go that hard, or I'm not even going to be available?
I think it's a lot of different things. I think one of it is it does help to get kind of a halftime during the course of an NBA season, although some people would say, well, that's what the All-Star break is. But I also think it's just also a sign of how much juice you have as a player. If you're getting these DNP rests, it's kind of because you're a veteran, you've paid your dues, you're a damn good player. So LeBron being able to take a week or two off puts him in a group by himself, if you know what I mean.
Like he's so important. He's earned it.
Yeah, he's so important that he can rest for a week. You're listening to Matt Steinmetz, it's Daryl the Guru Johnson on 95.7 The Game on a Sunday afternoon. What do you think? Is this a bigger game for the Golden State Warriors than it is for the Cleveland Cavaliers? Golden State's lost 4 straight times to the Cavaliers, although on the text line, the 925 is making it clear that this isn't the same Warrior team that lost on Christmas as the one that lost 3 games in a row in the NBA Finals. So he's not lumping all 4 losses together because last year's team.
I don't see that big of a difference.
Not really, because most of the players are Durant's on this team and Bogut and Spates and Azili and Barbosa aren't. But the core 3 of the Warriors, Draymond, Clay and Steph, all were a part of that loss last year, the 3 straight losses. So I think for them, it's the same. I mean, for them, they've got a psychological hurdle to overcome. But Durant, he's only played 1 game. He's played really well. He played well on Christmas. And
up until the 9-minute mark in the 4th quarter.
Right, right. Well, that could go for everybody, you know. But I do think there's something to, if the Cavs win tomorrow, that's going to be a problem for the Warriors in terms of, then I think the rest of this regular season, what are they going to be able to prove?
Nothing, man.
Everything they do from Monday to the end of the regular season, people won't be impressed with.
Not until that team is named the Cavs or Cleveland.
That's true.
How much pressure do you think Steve Kerr's under? Because he's already actually got a ring and he beat Cleveland. But again, Kyrie Irving was hurt. But I want to say one thing. I don't know if you heard this guy from Fox Sports, Nick Wright. He's really down on Iguodala. And he had some stats the other day that blew me away about this year, about Andre and what he's not doing. And it had me scratching my head like, do you think Andre's pacing himself? Because if he's not, and I know he's up there in age, Matt, that bench dynamic is going to be a big problem. And forget, it won't rear its head against the Cavs. You may not even get to the finals if Iguodala can't be the Iggy that we know. Are you concerned about him at all?
Yeah, I am a little bit, to tell you the truth, because this is his 4th year with the Warriors. He got a 4-year contract. And for the first 2 years, he's been pretty consistent.
Man.
You knew what to expect from him. He was never a huge stats guy, but he gave you all the intangibles. Then I think last year, he was more up and down. He was less consistent. And now I think this year, he's not been consistent at all. He's showing flashes lately that he's playing well. He's getting a little spring back in his step. He's also a player that I know knows his body really well. And he seems to be getting into the Bogut category from last year. Mm. Where you could tell after 3 minutes whether Bogut was going to be active or not in the game, whether he was feeling frisky or not. I think Iguodala is the same way. And The big thing's going to be how effective he can be against LeBron James in the NBA Finals, assuming those two teams meet. Because I think he had less success against LeBron James last year than he did the year before in terms of defending him.
What about Klay on LeBron? Is that
small stretches?
Kobe would try it. He tried
it.
I know it was
an
older Kobe, but I think he would have wanted that challenge.
I don't think he's physical enough for LeBron. I think that's one of the biggest Warrior problems, their lack of physicality up and down their lineup, whether it's their point guard with Curry or whether it's Klay
that's
or whether it's Durant.
The kind
of the kick I'm on right now is if I were a Warrior fan, the thing I'd be worried about is my team's really skinny. My team doesn't have a lot of vending machines on it, if you know what I mean. My team is slight. I'm sitting with Livingston. I'm sitting with McGee, Durant, Thompson, Curry. You know, when you get into the NBA Finals, you get into the playoffs and they let some more stuff go and it becomes more physical, that puts the Warriors at a big disadvantage.
Hey, that's very interesting, and I know I sound crazy with the defensive metrics that back up how phenomenal the Warriors' defense is, Matt, but on a night-in-night basis, I consider myself a basketball connoisseur. You can score easy on this Golden State team. And I know you can forget about it because they're so great offensively. But, Matt, you can score on them. And you just mentioned that they don't have big bones.
It's funny because I think a lot of their numbers, their advanced numbers, say that they're actually playing better D than last year. But I'm with you. I think they've had long stretches this year where the first half of a game is over and it's 65-60. They give up 60 points. Now, a lot of times they'll then only give up maybe 40, 45 in the second half. But that first half, I think what's happening is the Warriors are just content to kind of run up and down, let the other team, I don't want to say they let the other team hang in, but the other team hangs in for a half, and then they kind of turn it on in the second half.
And that's why I appreciate and I'm looking forward to this week ahead, because not only do they got their showdown against Cleveland, I want to see that Rocket team, who I think is going to give the Warriors some fits and already beat them in double OT.
Yes.
I want to see that game as well.
Let me tell you what we're going to have today on the Steinmetz and Guru show from noon until 4 o'clock. Coming up in 10 minutes, we're going to have Mike Renner. He's a senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. We got a jam-packed show, and I'm loving the guests. At 1:15, we got Bill Livingston. He's a sports columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He's all over the Cavaliers. He's going to give us some great insight on that game tomorrow. At 2:30, we'll have Dave Feldman. He's a sports anchor at Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area. At 3 o'clock, Jim Cosimore. He hosts Sports Talk Live on Comcast Sportsnet and also works pre- and post-game for the Sacramento Kings. And then at 3:30, we'll have Danny LaRue. He covers the NBA for the Sporting News and hosts the Locked On Warriors podcast. And if you don't know Danny, he's got tremendous insight about the Golden State Warriors. He's out at Oracle Arena every game, and he really knows how to go inside the game. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're starting out by talking Warriors Cavaliers. We'll switch it around to football in a little bit. And the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, 95795. Let's head out to Mark in San Francisco. Mark wants to talk a little Warriors Cavs. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, now, you guys beat me to the punch. You're right on top of it. Kyrie Irving absolutely destroyed the Warriors the way Stephon Curry destroyed every other team. Went to the hoop and was sinking shots, even though he had hands in his face. So I think for the Warriors, you guys are right. I think Iguodala's got to try to keep LeBron James out there and stay on him, because you can't even let him take three-point shots. He can hit those. And I think you got to make up for the lack of Bogut's presence. I think David West and the star Zaza have to step up into the paint and make sure that Irving isn't just going unabated to the basket of those layups.
Yeah.
They have to do something about that.
Yeah, good call. Thanks a lot, Mark, for the call. Appreciate it. Kyrie Irving has proven to be a shot maker against the Warriors, a big shot maker. And that's the one thing that would worry me if I were a Warrior fan, is just the Cavaliers' penchant for making big plays against Golden State. We're just not used to seeing that happen consistently, and now we have. The other thing, The Cavs were down 14 with 9 minutes to go, and they came back in a hurry in that game. And that's something we're usually used to seeing the Warriors do. They can score points in a hurry. But I'll tell you what, I was impressed the way the Cavs during that Christmas game, they got a stop, they scored. Stop, scored. Stop, scored. And just like that, it was a 4 or 5 point game. And now you're looking at plenty of time left. And I think it wore on the Warriors a little bit that they didn't put the Cavs away when maybe they had a chance.
Right. And that's why I think the addition to KD, it kind of confuses the Warriors on when it's Klay's time.
Right.
When is the Cavs
never
knew
Klay's
exactly
time.
What they wanted to do and how they were going to go about it. You mentioned the lack of girth by the Warriors. But the way they get killed by Kyrie is with speed. He's got that Tim Duncan-like touch on the glass mat. He can go by Steph. And Steph is, they're almost the same stature, so I'm wondering why can't anybody stay in front of him, or how dare I say that about the great Kyrie Irving? Who's gonna dare stay in front of him, Matt? Because there's a matchup problem. That's the elephant in the room. And I want to see if Kerr and company can figure out on who you're going to put on. Because if you put Klay on him, Klay's legs are going to be gone, but then on the offensive end, we don't need Klay's legs because we got Steph and KD, and that should be enough, right?
I think you got to put Klay on Kyrie Irving. I mean, I guess you could put Curry on him a little bit, not a lot, but if they're going to start, let's say, DeAndre Liggins, who's not an offensive player.
I don't like him. I don't like his body type. But
you can put Curry on him.
Okay.
Curry can guard him because he can't score. I mean, he's not an offensive player. But on the defensive end, he does a nice job. He's kind of like a poor man's Tony Allen.
That's nice.
But not even as offensively capable. I can't believe I'm saying that about Tony Allen because he's not very offensively capable. But Liggins is an interesting player. He's probably going to try to hold down the fort until J.R. Smith gets back. Let's go to Paul in Oakland. Paul wants to talk some Warriors. Oh, we don't have Paul? Okay, we don't have Paul. I think you're right about the huge week. It's not just the Cavs-Warriors tomorrow. This is probably the most intriguing week of the year for Golden State. They have the Cavaliers on Martin Luther King Day. Then on Wednesday, in come the Oklahoma City Thunder with Russell Westbrook. Guru, we're halfway through the year, and he's averaging a triple-double. And then we have on Friday the Warriors going to Houston and playing James Harden.
Love it.
I was thinking they're going up against Westbrook and then Harden. I think I'd like to see, as of right now, if I had a vote or I could do it, I would give those guys co-MVPs, Westbrook and Harden. I think they both deserve it. I think they're both having incredible years. The numbers are through the roof. You can't dismiss the fact that Westbrook's averaging a triple-double. You can't dismiss the fact that Houston's 30-10 or whatever they are, much better than anybody thought they'd be. I didn't think Oklahoma City was going to be this good. Everybody before the season was kind of being snide and saying, oh, Westbrook's going to take 38 shots and Westbrook's going to be a ball hog and do all this. And he's been very dominant with the ball, but they've been winning. They've been winning. They're on a 50-win pace.
They are, and even though he's averaging a triple-double, I don't want to talk about the state of the league and take anything away from that, Matt, but there's a lot of bad basketball and a lot of bad basketball teams, which in essence gives you bad basketball players. But Russell is what he is. But what James Harden has done and took the number two pencil and turned it upside down and used the eraser to just fix his image and erase all the laziness on defense. We heard that D'Antoni was going to be the coach, and everybody was laughing. And look now, what he's done and the way he's done it without being selfish, I'm really, really impressed. And I think right now, he's my MVP.
Westbrook?
Harden. Harden.
Okay.
And his basketball game is a mixture of so many just the Euro step. It's beautiful. It's beautiful what he's doing. And I'm going to throw this out here and I'm going off. If I rode the In-N-Out Burger with Steph Curry and said, "Hey, what do you really think about the addition of KD? Because you're a good guy for allowing that to happen." I wonder if he would look me in the face and say, my MVP chances would be hurt by adding another superstar to the degree that they have been. Because, Matt, nobody's even mentioning Steph.
Oh, he's not even close.
Yeah, but it's a
But I think
some guys would be upset with that, though.
He might be.
This was the two-time unanimous MVP, and now I'm getting to the fourth and fifth guy, and we don't mention his name. So kudos to him for signing off on KD coming to town. But, Matt, deep down, that's got to bother. That would bother me.
I wonder. He also knew he didn't get it done last year with what they had.
But they were up 3-1. They got it done. Draymond was the one. He was the culprit.
They lost game 6 and 7 with Draymond Green.
He didn't get the shot on,
All right. All right, we come back. We are going to talk with Mike Renner, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. You're listening to Steinmetz and the Guru on 95.7 The Game.
You're listening to Daryl the Guru Johnson and Matt Steinmetz on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, everybody. Matt Steinmetz and Daryl the Guru Johnson. Hey, I got to do something here. They got this soundboard where I'm in control. If I push a button, it'll get, you know, those sounders they always play sometimes.
I see your smile on you.
So I've never done this before, so I'm going to push it just to see what happens right now. See, did you hear that?
Yeah. It might have been you.
Okay, let's see. Let's see what this one says. I like Taylor Swift. Well, man, we could do this all day.
Oh,
Guru,
I
don't even have to talk, man. I mean, let's go to, how about, let's go to, what do we want to do here? How about Townie?
You don't think I'm hood. You don't think I'm street.
Okay. All right. I'm not gonna wear it all out right now. But man, I got those kind of things at my fingertips. There's a whole new avenue I can go down. I'm Matt Steinmetz along with Daryl the Guru Johnson. We're waiting for Mike Renner, but in the meantime, we're talking Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers who play tomorrow. This from Greg in San Francisco. You left out Draymond Green as a defensive liability.
Oh.
Against the Cavaliers, too. Tristan Thompson always busts up Green, and Love gets plenty of clean looks when the former isn't getting offensive boards. I don't think Kevin Love has an advantage against Draymond Green.
Well, he's too busy with Tristan Thompson to where Green just gets off on whoever's guarding him. We saw that in the finals. But to his point, size-wise, Draymond dwarfs with Cleveland's, you know, he looks, he's not the tallest guy.
Yeah, well.
And it hurts him.
All right, we'll get back into that in a minute. Right now, we're joined by Mike Renner. He's the senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Mike. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How you doing today?
Doing well. I'm looking at these games from yesterday with Daryl the Guru Johnson. We both watched them, kind of ho-hum. What was your general impression on the two games yesterday, Mike?
I think both games ended up going a little how I expected them to go. The first game of the day, the Seahawks won, I think you got a little away from the Seahawks more than I would have expected. I expected it to be somewhat of a tight game. But I think the Falcons' defense has sort of, you know, gotten better as the season's gone along. And just the air on them is just pointing up right now, so... I'm not too surprised by either of the results. Obviously, the Texans were an extremely flawed team going into New England. They really, I said before the game, I gave them a 0% chance to win the game. I rarely do that at any point in the season, but
right.
Just because of how overmatched they were, I don't think anyone thought they could actually pull off the upset.
I'm thinking of the Falcons' 36-20 win over Seattle, and I was telling Daryl before the show, I understand it turns into a two-touchdown-plus result, but man, if Seattle doesn't commit those penalties on the returns, it's a completely different ball game. It's amazing how those two or three penalties really hurt Seattle.
Yeah, that first one, the swing going from, you know, Atlanta, you know, inside Atlanta's red zone to, you know, a safety on the very next play after Wilson trips was about as big a swing as you'll see, you know, in the NFL. Over the course of a handful of plays. And that's what put them behind the eight ball to begin with. And it's really the Seahawks' MO all year long. If they're not a team that's built to come from behind and win games, they just don't have that sort of offensive firepower. If a team knows that they're going to pass, that's not a situation the Seahawks want to be in with that terrible, terrible offensive line.
Mike, speaking of Seattle, you know, I just can't still get past, you know, the pass play in the Super Bowl against New England to where they lost it. But they were so dominant. Had they won that game, they would have had two Super Bowls in that in a short time span. And I'm looking at this situation now. I'm looking at Richard Sherman be demonstrative on the sidelines, all up in Pete Carroll's face. And I'm looking at their O-line, you know, their running back, musical chairs. Do you think the end of an era is upon us in Seattle? And if it is, do you think it's a quick fix? Or how do you look at the Seahawks from your vantage point?
I don't think it's an end of an era, considering just how much talent they have still locked up for a handful of years with Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. I think, though, that we saw their offensive line was obviously one of the worst in the NFL this year. They just completely ignored that to pay all those guys we just said on the defensive side of the ball. But I think their defensive line, though, didn't have quite the same amount of firepower that's had in years past. And then it's just Russell Wilson was never forced to play behind an offensive line this bad. He was never forced to play from pressure as much as he was this year. I think if they can just get something figured out along that offensive line, gets, you know, at least some, you know, average to sort of play from that position, I think that I don't think it's a quick fix is necessarily out of the question for them.
Mike Renner joining us. He's a senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Mike. And I want to ask you about today's matchups. Green Bay going into Dallas, and then, of course, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, the game that's been pushed back to tonight in Kansas City. Let's touch on Dallas, Green Bay first. Impressions on that ball game?
This one's going to be really interesting to me. One, the two matchups I'll be looking for are, you know, Dallas going up against Aaron Rodgers, basically how they approach it. Are they going to be blitzing him heavily? I think last time they played, they dropped, they only rushed three guys, I think a third of the snaps. So they weren't, they're basically saying, hey, Aaron Rodgers, you know, beat us. We'll give you all day to throw, but we want you to beat us through a tight window. And he just didn't do that. I think that was one of his lowest graded games all year. And I anticipate that being the case this today. Dallas just has a lot of weapons in that secondary. And, you know, forcing Aaron Rodgers to throw into tight windows is probably the best way to beat him. Because, you know, I don't care how good your defensive line is, you're not going to get pressure on him routinely with at Packers offensive line. And the other one, the other matchup I'll be looking for is basically how the Packers do against the run. Are they giving up 4 or 5 yards a pop, or is it kind of 2-3, and then maybe they get 10 to 12? But I think if they're consistently getting 4 to 5 yards, I think the Green Bay Packers defense is going to be in trouble.
Mike, I heard a lot about the Texans defense and how stout it was all throughout the season, but last night I got to give them credit. I mean, for at least a good 10 minutes, I thought, what if? Could they get this? Could they pull this off? And I want to look at Tom Brady's performance. Do you think we need to just tip our hat to that great Texan defense? Or were you shocked at all by what you saw from Brady? Because I feel like he was getting some happy feet and they were hitting him. And, you know, he was missing some receivers.
No, I think Brady was easily at his worst that we've seen him all season long. We track a thing called turnover-worthy throws at Pro Football Focus, where it's basically a throw, even if it doesn't get intercepted, if it's a throw that probably could have or should have been intercepted. He had 4 such throws all season long, and I think yesterday he had 3. So in 12 games he had 4, and yesterday he had 3. He was definitely rattled, but that Texas defense, he's not going to face another team with that many good corners for the rest of the playoffs. There's a reason that they got as far as they did with that offense, and it's because, you know, they have some of the best, they have one of the best secondaries in the NFL.
Mike, I'm hearing the Cowboys may not be scared to go to Tony Romo if they need to. What would it take for the Cowboys to make that decision? Do they have to get down big? Would Garrett see something he doesn't like? What are the odds you think Romo takes some snaps in this game?
I put it so low at this point. Basically, it would have to take Dak Prescott getting injured for Romo to see snaps. I think the way they approached Week 17, only giving Romo a series, was basically to say, hey, there's no you know, tryout period for Romo. He's basically our number two, no matter what. I just don't think there's any chance that they're going to go away from Dak, even if they go down 28 early and Dak looks like he's having a rough game.
Mike, the Niners are in the process of looking for a new head coach. And when I sit back and think about Chip Kelly's tenure, 1 year in San Francisco, You know, a lot of me says, you know what, he got a raw deal. He didn't inherit a lot. And I'm wondering, do you feel the same way, or what do you think about Chip Kelly's tenure here in San Francisco?
Oh, I think any time you only get 1 year as a head coach, you're getting a raw deal just because of, you know, how much it takes to turn around a culture, turn around, you know, an organization. And especially when you're inheriting the type of talent that Chip Kelly was. I mean, that was a team where if you just look at the roster from top to bottom, I don't really care who's coaching him, you would have said that's a 2-3-win team. So he didn't obviously overperform, but at the same time, we've seen, you know, Hall of Fame head coaches have terrible, terrible seasons as well. So I think he definitely got a raw deal. At this point, I'm not sure if they can even attract, you know, top-tier coaching talent because of how they've treated their past few head coaches.
Mike, the Raiders have secured financing for a stadium in Vegas. What percentage odds do you put on them playing in Vegas in 2 or 3 years?
I didn't think that the Chargers to L.A. would happen, but when I heard the Raiders to Las Vegas, I didn't think that would happen. But with every passing day, it seems like the tie just starts to swing. And if I had to put money on it right now, I'd bet that they are going to be there, which is crazy to think about. But if I'm an NFL owner, I think Vegas would be, you know, a great place to have a franchise in terms of, you know, marketability and all the profitability that goes into a team like that.
Yeah, Mike, we're obviously out here in the Bay Area, and unfortunately, I tend to agree with you at this point. I think this team's headed on the way out. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, that was Mike Renner, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. If you want to give him a follow on Twitter, do it at @PFF_Mike. All right, when we come back, we touched on the Raiders and whether they're out of here. Guru's not having it. He's not happy about this. We'll be right back.
This is Daryl the Guru Johnson and Matt Steinmetz on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, everybody. Matt Steinmetz along with Daryl the Guru Johnson on a Sunday in the Bay. We got some football coming up. We got Dallas against Green Bay. That's starting in about a little under an hour.
Yeah,
and then later on tonight,
1:40.
Pittsburgh at Kansas City. Let's have a little fun right now, Guru, because I'm watching the Patriots, and I'm seeing Tom Brady and what they did yesterday. And you guys are talking, we just talked to Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus, and you guys are saying, you know, that was probably the least impressive game Tom Brady's played in a long time.
He looked normal, Matt.
And meanwhile, they win a playoff game by 18 points. Brady or Montana?
I'm going Montana.
Really?
And the reason I'm going Montana,
I think it's over, actually. I think Brady's leapfrogged him, officially.
If I were to tell you what is Montana's kryptonite, your answer, I would hope, would be there isn't any. And if you were to ask me Brady's kryptonite, I'd say the New York Giants, that front with Michael Strahan, he lost to the same team twice on the biggest stage. So to me, 4-2 does not supersede 5-0.
4-0.
There's no way, Matt. There's just no way.
See, I have a problem with that argument.
Undefeated.
If Tom Brady is 4-2 in the Super Bowl, Joe Montana is 4-0. I think 4-2 is better than 4-0.
Well,
because you're penalizing Brady for getting his team to the Super Bowl, where during those years Montana never got a team to the Super Bowl that didn't win it. In other words, they were eliminated before they got to the Super Bowl.
But when you do that, I feel like you go open up another can of rules. You know, when you go say, well, he got there, that's not the question. It's he lost twice to the same team. What about all the
time? But he advanced further than Montana.
Almost got there.
He's advanced further in the playoffs more times than Montana. Tom Brady.
I'll tell you this. Nobody's performed better on the Super Bowl stage than Joe Montana. And Tom Brady didn't get it done twice, Matt, to the same team, which tells me when it's all said and done, there was kryptonite in the version of the New York Football Giants to Tom Brady.
How about this? I went and did some addition and subtraction. the Patriots. All right, they've made the postseason 14 of the past 16 years.
Just think about that. Some
and they've
kids
gone
are...
to six Super Bowls.
Say that again. I'm sorry, man.
14 of the past 16 years, the Patriots have gone to the postseason, and they've won, and they've been in six Super Bowls. And the 49ers run with Montana and Young. They made the postseason 16 of 18 years, and they won five Super Bowls.
Wow.
I mean, those are two absolutely.
And I'm going with New England. Can I tell you why?
Sure.
One quarterback, one coach, as opposed to the Niners, there were some interchangeable
parts. But see,
parts.
You know, that's
Young,
interesting.
Montana, you know.
That's interesting, though, because when we're talking about dynasties, all right, you talk about the New England Patriots.
Joan Collins.
It's you know what? I had an unbelievable soft spot for her.
You and me both.
I mean, if you gave me the choice between her and Linda Evans, it's not even close.
Well,
I'm
Linda's
taking Joan
my number
Collins.
One. That wonder she did it for me.
Oh, you like Linda Evans?
It was Linda, Suzanne Summers, and Dolly Parton. Hence the triple D is my Twitter handle.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, those were my
You know, Linda Evans was married to Yanni. Remember the pianist? The guy who played the piano.
Yeah, I might have missed that. Yeah, I didn't know that. See?
Yeah, no, I was a Joan Collins fan too.
Yeah, she was awesome. She was gorgeous.
Yeah, she was not a schnauzer. No. She was not a schnauzer, no doubt about it. But as we get back to the Patriots, all right, so they've had an incredible run, but in essence, it's been all Brady, all Belichick. So I think, in a way, what the 49ers have done is different because they had different coaches. You know, they had Walsh, they had Seifert, they had Montana, they had Young. So they were able to, in essence, have a dynasty that went past just the two guys who are carrying it. And I know Bledsoe was there very early for the Pats, but I think what the Niners have done is pretty incredible. So we started to think about teams that have just been...
Oh, you're taking them over the Patriots run.
I don't know. I haven't really decided that. But I'm just trying to think of some of the greatest... Like the San Antonio Spurs, for example, what they've done for, well, first of all, their entire career.
This is amazing. How long? But,
and the reason I'm saying this is because of the Warriors. The Warriors have been to two straight NBA finals. They've been solid now for 5 years.
We're spoiled. People are spoiled out here.
You think the Warriors have 10 more years of four or five finals appearances and going to the playoffs every year? Because that's what they'd have to do to be mentioned with the Patriots, with the 49ers, with a Canadians, with the Celtics, with a Spurs.
If that doesn't put it in perspective, but some Warrior people here now, with the last couple of years, we feel like it's 10.
Right.
But just imagine having that level and that long of success. Man, I got to tell you, I know Steph Curry won't be at this level in 10 years. I know.
True.
You know? So
they're going to have to, like, when you think of the Spurs doing it, Tim Duncan, and before that, David Robinson and Popovich. Those were the three focal points. The Warriors, you're right. I mean, all their guys are kind of the same age in terms of Klay and Steph and Durant. So in order for them to carry this for another 8 to 10 years, they're going to have to find another superstar or two.
And that's what San Antonio did.
Right.
But it's what New England didn't have to do because...
They've been around the whole time.
But whoever was the supporting cast, those two guys remained in Belichick and Brady. And it didn't matter, which makes it almost, to me, that much more phenomenal.
What do you think about Victoria Principal? Were you a fan of her?
Yeah, she was just, Yeah, man, I watched Victoria, Dallas.
Do you watch Charlie's Angels back in the day?
Yeah,
Farrah Fawcett? Farrah Fawcett was the original.
The poster was in my room.
She was the original.
Huh? She was the angel of the Charlie Angels. Yeah,
Jacqueline Smith.
I loved them all, but she was the one.
Kate Jackson, remember her?
Yeah,
she was kind of like the more... I don't want to say homely one, but
She had a button she
could press. Incredible actresses is what I'm trying
to
say.
And then, not to veer off, NFL Today, the show that used to come on with Jimmy DeGree, Irv Cross, Brent Musburger, Jane Kennedy.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with Phyllis George.
Oh, no, well, she's right behind
Phyllis George.
Man, that was eye candy.
Well, what else do you remember about Jane Kennedy?
That was... She had some turbulence in the latter years.
One of the original videotape scandals,
exactly.
I believe.
Right.
I don't remember a lot about it, but I just remember there was some tape.
VHS.
But the tape was like, by today's standards, the tape would be like, what is this? We don't even know what this is. We don't know if that's her. We don't even know if that's a guy and a gal. That might be, it was so hard to.
I remember my crushes, Matt.
Do you?
Yeah.
Let's go to Rob in San Bruno. Rob, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm a diehard Niner, so I might be a little biased here.
It's all right.
Let's stop the nonsense, man. It's Montana. Montana is the man. He's the guy. Look at Brady first in Super Bowl. He was a game manager. The Patriots has always been about their defense. Their first Super Bowl wasn't built as Tom Brady versus Kurt Warner and the Rams. It was built as the Rams high-tech offense versus the defense of the past. It's always been about the defense. Bill Belichick schemes good. He can have a weak personnel, but he can scheme it to where it looks good. He's good at that. And all Brady has to do is manage the game. That's pretty much it. You look at the years where they had the high offensive numbers, they didn't win a Super Bowl. But when they had a good defense, they always won. So all Brady has to do is manage the game. And you look at Troy Brown making plays. Or you talking about Corey Dillon or guys like that, just like Deion Lewis yesterday making plays. Played through two interceptions. He didn't play good at all, but they was playing Houston and Belichick schemed it up and they won. So, but you look at Montana. Montana was the lead man, the lead dog. Him and Bill Walsh. You see what I'm saying?
I do, I got you, Rob. But I'll tell you what. The one thing that look, Montana was great. I'm not, and we're just having a little fun here. But look at his weapons. Jerry Rice, maybe the best football player who ever played, the receiver.
But he got John Taylor. Well. He utilized them. He excelled at utilizing them, Matt.
But what I'm saying is Rice, Taylor, perfect. And Roger Craig. I mean, those are
Roger
three of the
– Craig to me. Go ahead.
Craig was not rushed Tony for 1,000 yards and caught for 1,000 yards in the West Coast offense.
It was a system, Bill Walsh, that he could have put me back there and I would have got those numbers.
Guru.
No,
Roger
I'm being
Craig
honest.
Was great.
Well, don't tell me Roger Craig was Barry Sanders.
No.
Okay.
I'm not going to say
a
that, but he was a level
like
below.
That. No, he was great. But that system was great with what you're saying. But the Patriots, we didn't see Joe Montana have to do it with another cast. Tom Brady's had to do it with different casts.
That's why. That's credit to Brady, right?
That's what's leading me over that way. But those two blemishes, and they're big blemishes, against the Giants in the Super Bowl, against that same defensive unit, Matt, I'm telling you, I can't say you're number one when Montana never lost.
Cheryl Ladd?
Yeah.
You like Cheryl Ladd?
She was honorable mention. She was
my guy in the 925 says Cheryl Ladd and Bernadette Peters. Yeah, I wouldn't have put. See, I wouldn't put Bernadette Peters into all the other names we had.
Yeah, nah.
Although Bernadette Peters was in what movie was she in? It was with Gene Wilder and what the heck was that called? Was it Young Frank? No, it wasn't Young Frankenstein. It was a movie like that. And of course, Adrienne Barbeau.
Oh man.
You know, you can follow her on Twitter. I follow her on Twitter.
I'm going to do that.
She's
after
a good
this
follow.
Show, yeah.
You know why she's a good follow? Because you can follow her son's soccer career.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you want to do something stalkerish like that. All right. You're listening to Matt Steinmetz and Daryl the Guru Johnson. We come back. More Warriors Cavs talk. And we are going to be joined by Bill Livingston, a sports columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. You're listening to Steinmetz and the Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.